Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Did Solomon and Sheba have an Ethiopian son? Rulers 10th Century BC Meeting Still Offers Questions by Bob Campbell. It is much more than a legend in Ethiopia. It's accepted as a historical fact that when the Queen of Sheba traveled to Jerusalem to meet King Solomon and give him gifts, she became pregnant and had a son by him, who became King Menelik I and established the royal Solomonic dynasty of Ethiopia, which lasted till the advent of King Haile Selassie I in 1974. Ministers Albert Flores and Leslie Boone say the 10th century BC meeting of the two rulers who lived 1,500 miles apart is described in 1 Kings 10, 1 through 12, and 2 Chronicles 9, 1 through 13, which say the queen of Ethiopia and Egypt had heard of Solomon's wisdom and wanted to question him. In tribute, she brought him 4.5 tons of gold and large quantities of spices and precious stones. And when she left 6 months later, the king gave her all she desired and asked for, beside what he had given her out of his royal bounty. The Reverend Flores, pastor of Victory Life Church, said the Queen of Sheba wanted to learn more about God, and she came to seek Solomon, to seek his wisdom. You can have all the material in the world, but without God's presence, there is still a void, the Reverend Flores said. We learn from this story that we should seek the wisdom of God, because we can't go wrong if we learn more about him and get to know him better. Flores said God has placed a hunger for him within us and a hunger for the living water of the Holy Spirit. Solomon was a man of God who had the wisdom of God, he said. The scripture says to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and he will bless us according to our needs. Asked if the two had a child, Flores said, I believe the Queen of Sheba wanted a son by Solomon because he was a blessed man of wisdom and knowledge. She was really wealthy and she gave him a lot of things. I think she had a boy, Menelik I. Boone, minister of Andrews Church of Christ, said the scriptures suggest that the two spent time together and had conversations and exchanged gifts. But I don't know if we can say that because we're not really given much to go on. It's within the realm of possibility, but I don't put a lot of weight on all the conjecture. Boone said Sheba apparently traveled north by the Euphrates River and cross country in a camel caravan to reach Jerusalem. You realize how many people she must have brought along with her, he said. They could have come up the river and then across land by one of the routes that the caravans took. She wanted to go see Solomon for herself, and he answered all her questions. It was very grandiose. Boone said Solomon might have become infatuated with the Queen of Sheba because he had 300 wives and 700 concubines, many of whom were foreign and eventually corrupted his religion and offended God. Women were his one weakness, he said. He thought he could handle all these relationships, and it just shows that wisdom has its limitations. Referring to Solomon's writings in the book of Ecclesiastes, Boone said he had learned toward the end of his life that nothing held water except living as God intended. Ash Wednesday, A Time for Reflection, by Reverend Dr. Don Darwin Weeks, pastor of Connection Christian Church. Ash Wednesday is such a weird and wonderful day. This Wednesday, throughout the globe, Christians will receive a cross drawn in ash on our foreheads. Wearing the cross is common practice for many Christians, but usually it's as jewelry or possibly a t-shirt. But on Ash Wednesday, it's a smudge on our faces. On any other day, Christians wearing crosses might come across as a little smug or holier than thou to some. But on Ash Wednesday, it just looks like, you've got something there on your forehead. What's more, the message of Ash Wednesday is pretty intense. You are dust, and to dust you will return, from Genesis 2:7, is what is said traditionally to the person receiving ashes. We might as well say, you're going to die, so live right quick. Every other day of the year, we tiptoe around death. We say people passed away instead of died, and carefully take our vitamins, trying to avoid death altogether if we can. But on Ash Wednesday, it's right out there. We die. So what's really important in our lives? We might not have until next Ash Wednesday to act on that. So we best do it now. And this is the wonderful part alongside the weird part of Ash Wednesday. It gives us a moment to remember that we are only human, humans who die and hurt and screw up. We take time to acknowledge that there's no time to lose. We need to forgive and to be forgiven by each other and by God. We pause and admit that we will not live on this earth forever, so how we live right now matters. And we confess that there is only one who can hold us beyond death, whose hands we are in ultimately, our God, who created us out of the dust and breathed life into us. You're invited to get your ashes from an ecumenical group of churches on February 14th at Ashes to Go at 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. at Stripes on Faudry, 10 to 11 a.m. at Market Street, noon to 1 p.m. at the corner of Tanglewood and Pembroke, 2 to 2:30 p.m. at the Medical Center Chapel, and 4 to 5 p.m. at the parking lot for Chick-fil-A on 42nd. Four churches will combine for a worship service at Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood, at 6:30 p.m. Wherever and however you celebrate, I hope you will take time to receive the gift of a blessed Ash Wednesday, dear magnificent and mortal friends.
Live music, Chicago Live in Midland on Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is around the corner, and fans of the classic band Chicago will have the opportunity for a date night at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center in Midland. The original three band members, including Robert Lamb on keyboards and vocals, Lee Lugnane on trumpet and vocals, and James Pankow on trombone, will perform live along with Wally Reyes Jr. on drums, Tony Abrata on guitar, Lauren Gold on keyboards and vocals, Ray Herman on sax and flute, Neil Donnell on vocals, Eric Baines on bass, and Ramon Ray Yalas on percussion. The American rock band formed in 1967 in Chicago, Illinois, hence the band name Chicago, and has recorded 38 albums, selling millions of records, according to the band's website. Fans can expect to hear classic hit songs such as If You Leave Me Now, Does Anybody Really Know What Time It Is, and 25 or 6 to 4. Chicago has toured every year since the beginning. They've never missed a year, the venue stated. Doors to the show open at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, February 14th, and tickets are on sale now, with prices ranging from $70 to $135. The venue is located at 1310 Farm to Market Road, 1788 in Midland, Texas. For additional information and tickets and ticket inquiries to a show, visit the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center website. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, February 14th, 2024. Take action during Cancer Awareness Month. What do we do during Cancer Prevention Month? This month can have many interpretations for many people. To a provider like myself of breast and colon cancer and a co-survivor of her late mother, it is more than just wearing the ribbon or a color associated with a specific cancer. A previvor is someone who has a higher predisposition or risk of developing hereditary cancers, and a co-survivor is someone who provides any support during or after a survivor's cancer journey. It's more than recognizing cancer awareness during 1 month. It's taking action throughout the year. Awareness is one piece of the puzzle in removing cancer from this world. Along with awareness, we need action, research, education, advocacy, and support. This awareness can create a movement, but if there is no meaning or action behind wearing the pink or blue, for example, then the progression of our fight against cancer gets diluted. Why is there a fight against cancer still? Because we are still discovering the sources of cancer. We know cancer is linked to a combination of risk factors. Some we know of, and some are still yet to be discovered. Although we need more answers, we have gained a lot of knowledge and removed stigmas. We know genetics and family history, lifestyle choices, environment, and more play a part in someone's chances of developing cancer. We know some risk factors that are associated with cancer we cannot change, like age, gender, and genetics. We also know some risk factors we can change, like healthy diets, exercising, and limiting alcohol and tobacco can help reduce your risk. We know early detection and effective treatment results in the best outcomes. Continuing the fight against cancer takes investing in new research, finding better treatments for specific cancers, and taking action to make a change. Awareness starts the discussion, but what we do with this awareness is the most important. Being proactive as a previvor gives me the power to fight against cancer by screening early and knowing what signs and symptoms to look for, to look and feel for. Some cancers have no symptoms, so discussing your risk of cancers with a trusted provider can help understand your predisposition. No matter your association with cancer, it's never too early to start a conversation with your provider about your risk and when the right time for you to start screening for cancers is. As we learn about our individual risks, we can use that as power to take our health into our own hands and take action. So, after reflecting on Cancer Prevention Month, I hope you remember to recognize why you are wearing that color or ribbon. Is it to open up a conversation with a friend or family member? Is it to remind yourself to schedule your screening? Is it to support your friends or family by advocating for patient rights and support organizations that provide resources and support? Wherever you may be on your cancer awareness journey, continue to take action to move the needle. Let us come together, prioritize our health, and continue working towards a world without cancer. Mental Health Divides Abortion Rights Initiatives. Chicago. The weeks after Kania Harris found out she was pregnant were among the hardest in her life. Final exams were fast approaching for the college junior. Her doctors told her she had an ovarian cyst, and the risk of ectopic pregnancy was high. The wait times for abortion clinics near her city of Bethesda, Maryland, seemed impossibly long, and she couldn't visit her family in Kentucky because of the state's abortion ban. Harris was having regular panic attacks. It all felt like too much, she said. Quote, my mental health was at the lowest point it's ever been in my life, end quote, said Harris, who had an abortion last May. As advocates push this year for ballot measure initiatives aiming to protect abortion rights, key differences have emerged in the language of proposed measures. Among them is the inclusion of mental health exceptions. A Missouri proposal would allow lawmakers to restrict abortions after a fetus is considered viable, except if an abortion, quote, is needed to protect the life or physical or mental health of the pregnant person, end quote. A similar measure has been proposed in Arizona. In 2022, Michigan voters passed an abortion rights amendment with a mental health exception for viability limits. Meanwhile, proposed ballot measure language in Arkansas only says, quote, physical health, end quote, excluding a mental health exception. Proposed abortion rights initiatives in other states, including Florida, Montana, and Nebraska, don't explicitly mention mental health. Quote, it's heartbreaking to hear about these policies ignoring mental health, end quote, said Harris, now 21. Quote, an abortion can save someone's life, including when they're in a mental health emergency, end quote. Most states with abortion bans include exceptions for life-threatening emergencies, but only Alabama's includes an exception for, quote, serious mental illness, end quote, that could result in the death of the mother or fetus. Lawmakers added the provision after getting pressure from the state's medical association, which was concerned about women at high risk for suicide. The law, passed in 2019, was among the strictest abortion restrictions in the country at the time. It did not include exceptions in cases of rape or incest and considered performing an abortion to be a felony. Alabama began enforcing the ban in 2022 after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, which once granted a federal right to abortion. Abortion bans in at least 10 states, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Iowa, Kentucky, Louisiana, Ohio, Tennessee, West Virginia, and Wyoming, explicitly exclude mental health conditions as a possible exception. Others are murkier, allowing for exceptions for the, quote, life and health, end quote, of the woman without defining if mental health is included. Medical experts say even states that do allow mental health exceptions require patients to jump through hoops that may be inaccessible to some people, especially those with low incomes. Alabama, for example, requires a state-licensed psychiatrist with at least 3 years of clinical experience to certify the mental health condition as an emergency. Some days, when Harris would get home from class, she would be, quote, so overwhelmed that I'd have a breakdown on the floor, end quote, she said. For 2 months, she cried every day, but facing an abortion ban in her home state and stigma from doctors, Harris said she didn't feel comfortable speaking about her experience with a mental health professional. Quote, people shouldn't have to jump through hoops and prove their pain to have access to the care they need, end quote, she said. Mental health conditions were the leading underlying cause of pregnancy-related deaths from 2017 to 2019, with nearly 23% of pregnancy-related deaths attributed to mental health conditions, including suicides and overdoses from substance use disorders, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. About 1 in 8 women experience postpartum depression, according to the CDC. But mental health struggles during pregnancy, especially the psychological trauma of those forced to carry unwanted pregnancies, are understudied, said Michelle Oberman, a Santa Clara University law professor researching the impact of abortion restrictions. Quote, these statistics, these stories of women's suffering have been really haunting me, end quote, Oberman said. Quote, we don't as a society have a great track record of treating mental health the same way we do physical health, end quote. Policies that dismiss mental health as less important than physical health put lives at risk, said Columbia University psychiatrist Paul Applebaum. He said there is also growing evidence that being denied an abortion causes significant mental distress. This distress has been apparent in recent stories of women forced to flee their states or continue pregnancies despite serious risk to their health. Quote, I am extremely concerned by the exclusion of mental health exceptions in these ballot measures, end quote, said Applebaum, former president of the American Psychiatric Association. Quote, it's absolutely cruel and will lead to the suffering deaths of pregnant women in these states, end quote. Jamie Trevino, an OBGYN in Missouri and fellow with Physicians for Reproductive Health, said she has seen firsthand how being denied abortion care can affect a patient's well-being, including their mental health. Quote, it's a devastating regular reality for my patients, end quote, she said, adding that she was grateful for the mental health exception in the state's proposed ballot measure language. Mallory Schwartz, a spokesperson for Missourians for Constitutional Freedom, said the initiative's language, quote, is written to make sure that doctors, not politicians, are able to determine what's best for their patients, end quote. Conversely, an Arkansas initiative only includes exceptions, quote, to protect a pregnant female's life or to protect a pregnant female from a physical disorder, physical illness, or physical injury, end quote. Previous versions of the proposal included broader exceptions, said Jenny Diaz, executive director of For AR People, Initially, she said, quote, "We wanted to craft language for a constitutional amendment that would be as broad as possible and would hopefully account for something like mental health," end quote. But when handed a proposal with exceptions to, quote, "protect the life and health," end quote, of the mother, the state's attorney general, a Republican, rejected the language, saying it must define, quote, "health," end quote. Quote, "That was a signal to us that we were going to have to make a choice," end quote, Diaz said. Quote, "And another unfortunate factor is that the majority of Arkansas voters are unlikely to support mental health as a reason for an abortion after a particular time frame. We felt it was unlikely for a version that explicitly names mental health to pass," end quote. Arkansas advocates were also worried the opposition campaign would target a mental health exception, Diaz said. The National Right to Life Committee's model state legislation for abortion bans explicitly excludes mental health exceptions. These exceptions allow pregnant women, quote, to kind of bypass those laws and still abort pregnancies of children that were viable, end quote, said Ingrid Duren, state legislative director of the NRLC. Quote, "We specifically exclude mental health exceptions because we saw how that creates a loophole in a law, and it leaves that unborn child at risk of dying for a sometimes treatable, sometimes temporary condition that the mother may be experiencing," end quote, she said. When asked if targeting mental health exceptions will be part of their strategy for campaigning against abortion ballot measures in 2024, she said, quote, "I can't necessarily say that would be part of the strategy," end quote. Still, said Duran, quote, "When I see mental health exceptions like this, my heart drops," end quote. Oberman from Santa Clara University said she expects to see the anti-abortion movement, quote, "employ a strategy of minimizing and dismissing the mental health consequences of forced pregnancy," end quote. Quote, "The mental health issues of pregnant people remain in the shadows and highly stigmatized," end quote, she said. Quote, "And that clouds our judgment of what a medical emergency looks like during pregnancy," end quote. Oregon resident diagnosed with bubonic plague. Here are a few things to know about the illness. Officials in Central Oregon this week reported a case of bubonic plague in a resident who likely got the disease from a sick pet cat. The infected resident and the resident's close contacts have all been provided medication, public health officials say, and people in the community are not believed to be at risk. The cat was also treated but did not survive. Plague isn't common, but it also isn't unheard of in the western United States, where a handful of cases occur every year. It's different from Alaska pox, a rare, recently discovered disease that killed a man in Alaska last month. Here are a few things to know about what the plague is, who is at risk, and how a disease that was once a harbinger of death became a treatable illness. What is plague? Plague is an infectious disease that can affect mammals. It's caused by the bacterium Yersinia pestis, which is carried by rodents and fleas. Sunlight and drying can kill plague bacteria on surfaces, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Humans and pets suspected to be sick with plague are typically treated with antibiotics and sometimes with other medical measures. Plague symptoms can manifest in a few ways. Bubonic plague, the kind contracted by the Oregon resident, happens when the plague bacteria gets into the lymph nodes. It can cause fever, headache, weakness, and painful, swollen lymph nodes. It usually happens from the bite of an infected flea, according to the CDC. Septicemic plague symptoms happen if the bacteria gets into the bloodstream. It can occur initially or after bubonic plague goes untreated. This form of plague causes the same fever, chills, and weakness, as well as abdominal pain, shock, and sometimes other symptoms like bleeding into the skin and blackened fingers, toes, or the nose. The CDC says this form comes from flea bites or from handling an infected animal. Pneumonic plague is the most serious form of the disease, and it occurs when the bacteria gets into the lungs. Pneumonic plague adds rapidly developing pneumonia to the list of plague symptoms. It is the only form of plague that can be spread from person to person by inhaling infectious droplets. All forms of plague are treatable with common antibiotics, and people who seek treatment early have a better chance of a full recovery, according to the CDC. Am I at risk of plague? In the U.S., an average of 7 cases of human plague is reported each year, according to the CDC. and about 80% of them are the bubonic form of the disease. Most of those cases were in the rural western and southwestern U.S. A welder in central Oregon contracted it in 2012 when he pulled a rodent out of his choking cat's mouth in 2012. He survived but lost his fingertips and toes to the disease. A Colorado teen contracted a fatal case while hunting in 2015, and Colorado officials confirmed at least two cases last year, one of them fatal. Worldwide, most human cases of plague in recent decades have occurred in people living in rural towns and villages in Africa, particularly in Madagascar and Congo, according to the Cleveland Clinic. People can reduce the risk of plague by keeping their homes and outdoor living areas less inviting for rodents by clearing brush and junk piles and keeping pet food inaccessible. Ground squirrels, chipmunks, and wood rats can carry plague as well as other rodents, and so people with bird and squirrel feeders may want to consider the risks if they live in areas with a plague outbreak. The CDC says repellent with DEET can also help protect people from rodent fleas when camping or working outdoors. Flea control products can help keep fleas from infecting household pets. If a pet gets sick, they should be taken to a vet as soon as possible, according to the CDC. Isn't plague from the Middle Ages? The Black Death in the 14th century was perhaps the most infamous plague epidemic, killing up to half of the population as it spread through Europe, the Middle East, and Northern Africa. It began devastating communities in the Middle East and Europe between 1347 and 1351. And significant outbreaks continued for roughly the next 400 years. An earlier major plague pandemic, dubbed the Justinian Plague, started in Rome around 541 and continued to erupt for the next couple hundred years. The third major plague pandemic started in the Yunnan region of China in the mid-1800s and spread along trade routes, arriving in Hong Kong and Bombay about 40 years later. It eventually reached every continent except Antarctica, according to the Cleveland Clinic, and is estimated to have killed roughly 12 million people in China and India alone. In the late 1800s, an effective treatment with an anti-serum was developed. That treatment was later replaced by even more effective antibiotics a few decades later. Though plague remains a serious illness, antibiotic and supportive therapy is effective for even the most dangerous pneumonic form when patients are treated in time, according to the World Health Organization.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.